Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. It was 64 years ago that the papers were signed ending the Korean War. The fighting stopped, but there has never been a formal peace. We are still living with the consequences of that uneasy armistice. The conflict is called the Forgotten War, but not forgotten by the hundreds of thousands of veterans still alive who fought there, or by the families of some 36,000 Americans who died there. Our guest on today's program is a Korean War vet, 90-year-old St. Louisan Leonard Adrian was a Marine Medical Corpsman in Korea. More than 60 years after the Korean Armistice was signed, Adrian wrote a book about his experience. It's titled Hilltop Doc, a Marine Corpsman Fighting Through the Mud and Blood of the Korean War. Leonard Adrian, welcome to the studio.
Thank you, Don. Glad to be here.
Nice to have you here. You know, I thought of you yesterday. I watched the ceremony in which the Medal of Honor was bestowed upon a Vietnam War medic. He had the same job in Vietnam that you had in Korea. You watched that as well, didn't you?
I did. I saw that ceremony. It was very impressive.
It really was. And did it bring back any memories for you because you both had the same job and doing medical work under very, very poor conditions?
Yes, his job was the same job as mine. We had to find the wounded. We had to treat the wounded. We tried to save lives. And we had to fight through the battle conditions that existed, in my case, in the hills and on the hilltops of Korea. His case was different because it was Vietnam, but our jobs were the same. And what struck me, too, is that 108, actually, corpsmen with the Marines died in that war in Korea, and five received the Congressional Medal of Honor, four of whom received it after they were dead, and one was alive to receive it. So I could relate to getting corpsman getting a Congressional Medal.
For that particular line of work in combat, it's a lot like policemen and firemen today. You're running in the opposite direction oftentimes of the people you're trying to help.
Actually, we're running in the same direction because when we assembled at the bottom of a hill and we were going to take a hill, we're going up with the platoon that we're assigned to. Mm-hmm. So there was two corpsmen in my platoon, and we're moving up the hill with the platoon. And, of course, when somebody is injured and they yell, corpsman, we've got to go and find them and do the best we can to save them.
Under fire most of the time, under those conditions.
Under fire, yes.
It was the anniversary of the armistice. The end of the war was just a couple of weeks ago. What were you thinking as that date was observed?
Well, I was distressed, frankly, that we're 64 years later. And the conditions in Korea and the situation in Korea is very frightening. It's distressing. It's almost terrifying because we are apparently on the brink of another explosion there, and I'm very concerned about the Americans and having to fight another war in Korea. I don't think we should fight another war in Korea to save Korea, save South Korea again.
It's all part of the fallout from the Korean War because the country was divided, and now you have two countries there and a fellow who's running the North who's so totally unpredictable.
Correct, he is, and he's the world is justifiably frightened by what he might do.
You know, Leonard, it occurs to me that there are a lot of people listening to us right now who don't understand that war. We call it the Forgotten War, and in their minds it pretty much has been forgotten. I know you find that distressing.
I do, but it's understandable that it's a forgotten war because we had World War II, which ended in 1945, and then you had the Vietnam War, which was in the 60s, and squeezed in between those two events was the Korean War, which started in 1950 and ended in 1953. And you got to remember that in 1950, 51, 52, no cable channels, no 24-hour news service. People didn't hear about the war as they did about the Vietnam War. So when Vietnam came along in the 60s, that was a very much publicized and very controversial war, of course. Korea was kind of left in the middle, and the Korean War started at the 38th parallel and it ended at the 38th parallel, and the perception in the minds of many Americans was it didn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And it was, but my perception's entirely different. We saved South Korea from the North, and there are 50 million people living in a prosperous nation called South Korea right now who would been would otherwise have been under this Kim Jong-un, who is has impoverished the country of North Korea.
And South Korea, of course, is a very vibrant society, but within artillery range of North Korean guns, even today.
Absolutely.
And today. Well,
South Korea is a small place. It's the size of Indiana. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can reach any place in South Korea, not too difficultly, but if you have the artilleries and you've got the wherewithal to do it.
And yet it's an economic powerhouse today, even given its small size.
Absolutely.
You got, one of the things I wanted to mention is we keep calling it a war. It's the Korean War. But as I recall in the day, it was called a police action. We didn't call it a war even.
That's right. The United Nations interceded after the invasion by North Korea of South Korea, and they called it a police action. And Harry Truman, our president, called it a police action. But it's hardly a police action when you have 36,000 dead and 104,000 wounded and another 8,000 who are still listed as missing in action. That is not a police action. That's a full-fledged war. And we were fighting most of the time against the Chinese. We were at war with China, not at war with North Korea. Mm-hmm. We had pretty much knocked North Korea out of the war when the Chinese interceded in November of 1950 and hundreds of thousands of Chinese soldiers came across the Yalu River, and they extended that war, and they are responsible for most of the casualties that we experienced.
You know, and thinking back in that particular history, I do remember that General MacArthur, he wanted to chase the Chinese back across the Yalu River, and President Truman wouldn't let him. I wonder how the world would have changed had he been allowed to do that.
Well, unfortunately for all of us, General MacArthur made a very big mistake because he was warned by the Chinese not to go north of the 38th parallel. And General MacArthur convinced Truman that it was okay to go north of the 38th because MacArthur felt the Chinese would not enter the war. And of course, when MacArthur reached Pyongyang, and he had pretty much beaten the North Koreans, China sent all those troops over there in November 1950, and that extended the war all the way to July of 1953. So he had convinced Truman. Truman met with him on Midway Island, I think of Midway Island, and or Wake Island, one of the two. And it was a mistake by MacArthur, and of course it eventually led to the firing of MacArthur by Truman.
And what were you and your colleagues in the field thinking about all of this as it was going on?
Well, the Marine Corps didn't like General MacArthur because he felt that he cost us hundreds of thousands of casualties, and what he did extended the war unnecessarily. And so we were frustrated. Actually, there was when I got there in 1951, there was a great deal of frustration because it was a war that was stagnant. Our assignment was kill and maim as many of the enemy as possible. And the rationale for that was that if we kill enough, the Chinese would be willing to stop the fighting and agree to a ceasefire. So we took a hill, we lost a hill, we took a hill, we took the same hill over again, and every time we took the hill, we've experienced casualties, and they experienced casualties, and this went on and on and on while they were talking at Panmunjom and not reaching any accord.
Under awful conditions, too. The weather there was just hideous, wasn't it?
It was. Remarkably so. We were in the hills, of course.
Sure.
And in the winter conditions, it's very severe. We were well below zero many days, a lot of snow, a lot of ice, a lot of sleet, all of those conditions. We're fighting those conditions as well as fighting the enemy. In the summer, hot and muggy and full of mosquitoes and bugs and conditions like that we were fighting. So Yes, the conditions at the 38th parallel in the hills of Korea, and even worse was at the Chosin Reservoir, where the temperatures dropped down to as low as 20 or 30 or 40 degrees below zero before we got there.
I have a cousin who fought there. He had stories to tell about
it. Oh, yeah. Frostbite was as much of a condition as it was wounds of war.
Were you armed as a corpsman? Were you armed?
Yes, I carried an M1 carbine, and I carried a 45 pistol, and I carried grenades on my belt. And that's not normal for the corpsman, but I was able to throw a grenade farther and more accurately than many of the Marines were, because I was a pitcher when I was a kid growing up, and I had a strong right arm, which is gone now, but I had a strong right arm, and so I did all those things, and I used my weapons, sadly.
I ask that because I was always under the impression that corpsmen were not armed, and that was another liability for them. They had to go into under the sometimes withering firing conditions, but they couldn't display arms because they would become targets themselves.
No, we looked just like all the other riflemen in the Marine Corps, and most of them didn't carry a 45. I got my 45 because I treated a lieutenant who died on the hillside, and the corporal that was working with me on it took his web belt and gave it to me and said, you might need this, and so I learned how to use a 45. Mm. Which most corpsmen did not carry. Most corpsmen only had an M1, and they didn't use the grenade either.
Did you ever get used, could you ever get used to doing what you had to do? I mean, trying to keep people alive and oftentimes being unable to do so.
No, I didn't get used to it. But we were there, and we had no choice, and we had to do our job. And our mission was, as far as the corpsman, If a yell came, corpsman, you went to where the injured Marine was. You did the best you could to save his life. You stopped the bleeding. You gave him the morphine to eliminate the pain or alleviate the pain. That's all we could do in the rush of battle. Then we could immobilize him and tag him for the stretcher bearers, who then came up the hill and took the wounded down to a first aid tent that we had at the bottom of the hill.
How many men do you think you worked with and helped during the year or so that you were there?
Oh, I never did try to count them. It's in the hundreds and maybe 1,000 or more. I would say it's more than 1,000 probably.
In contact with any of them? I know that sometimes happened.
Contact now, you mean?
Yeah, or following the war.
No, I didn't talk to anybody who was in the war with me for more than 60 years. And the reason for that was when I got my orders to leave Korea and I was going to be coptered out, I was at this copter pad, which is an old rice paddy, and a bunch of my platoon members came to say goodbye to me. And we had a conversation and we all agreed that we were going to put the war behind us. We were not going to communicate with each other. We didn't exchange addresses or phone numbers, no reunions, and we were going to look to the future, and we thought it best to do it that way, and that's exactly what I did. So I have no contact with anybody that was with me there or anybody else.
That is part of your story, the fact that you had not wanted to tell the story for all those years. I understand you and your wife over the years never talked about it.
That's correct. I came home in 1952. My mother, my father, and my brother wanted to know all about it. I told them we're not going to review that war. And the next year in 53, I married Audrey Seitman, a beautiful and lovely young woman. And she knew I'd been to Korea, but she knew I didn't want to talk about it. And for 60-plus years, we hadn't, not one word was said.
So what happened to cause you to suddenly break your silence?
I'm a facilitator of writing classes at Lifelong Learning at Washington University. And a friend of mine, Dick Hyde, was doing a class on the Korean War, and they had not seen or talked to anybody that actually had been there. And he asked me if I'd spend 15, 20 minutes with that class. And so I went there at his request. I told him I'd give it a shot. maybe that's not a good word, but 15 or 20 minutes became an hour, and then another hour, another hour, and two things happened. I was amazed at the detail that they wanted to hear about what happened in Korea on those hills and in those valleys, and I found out that my memory of that time was very crisp, very clear, very vivid. And so they insisted I start writing some of that down. And I did write little vignettes for my memoir class. And then after a few of those vignettes were written, they said, you got to write a book. The faculty at Washington U said they wanted me to write a book so I could tell realistically what war is really not all about, not the movie version that you get from films. But when I thought about it, and I resisted writing the book, I began to think of the 36,000 and the fellow corpsman that died and the other Marines that I tried to treat and couldn't save, and I said that I should do something to honor all those people.
Right. And what did it do for you in terms of reviving those memories, drawing them back out?
I think it was good to get it out of my system. It was buried in there. And they say that writing about your life is therapeutic. I'm not a doctor. I'm just a corpsman, and I can't analyze that. But I'm proud of the book that I wrote because I think it does do honor to the Korean War and to particularly the Marine Corps where I was serving. And I'm glad that some people are going to read the book and get a real picture of what war is like, not this phony picture that we sometimes walk around with, particularly young people who don't know.
Yeah, it certainly is different from the John Wayne movies where people get shot and just drop. It's so totally unrealistic, isn't it?
Yes.
We have a caller here that wants to get into this conversation, and so let's bring him in. His name is Dennis. He's calling from University City. Dennis, you're on the air with Leonard Adrian. Go ahead.
Well, I just wanted to tell you guys, I'm a Vietnam Tet vet. I was up north, but non-combat. And I'm aware of the incredible courage that you Medicare guys have and do, and how valuable you are, and how I believe that you deserve the Congressional Medal of Honor, and as much as any combat guy, and your knowledge and your information about the Korean War is information I already know. However, I believe it's a very rare amount of knowledge, and in a book that's fabulous. And Don Marsh, you on a daily basis are just wonderful. And thank you so much for accepting me. And please excuse my quivering and my emotion.
Dennis, thank you. Thank you for calling and for the nice words. We appreciate that.
You're so very welcome.
There are a lot of people out there who have not forgotten Leonard.
Thank you. Thank you, Dennis.
And speaking of memory, we have another caller here. Jerry joins us from O'Fallon. Apparently, his memory is pretty good, too. So, Jerry, come on in.
Yes. Thank you very much. I salute your service. And I wanted to reinforce, having worked with people that had gone through traumatic situations, it always amazes me that years later, not in the case of the length of time of yours experience, but the vividness of recall, having watched two people that experienced, say, in an aircraft accident, reunite years later, and you can almost see the physiological changes in them when they kind of get engaged in this, and they are really living that as if it happened last week. And it's just one of those things that I don't think anyone who doesn't experience it firsthand, such as myself who hasn't, it is something that you're looking at and thinking, this is a very special bond that people carry with them. And I think it's also very helpful, as I'm sure you found out, to express that and to use it to really give other people an idea of what it's really like. So
Jerry,
thank you.
Jerry, thank you for the call.
Thank you, Jerry.
Yeah. Anything else you want to add to what he had to say with regard to that special bond? For instance, since the book has been written, I know it's only been out for a matter of weeks now. Have you had any response from people such as yourself, who fought in Korea?
I have had, yes. I've had some calls from people even from the West Coast, that found the book somehow and could relate to it and told me that it was a good thing that I could put it down on paper and let people understand what this war was really all about.
What was the response like when you came home? I mean, I think back to Vietnam and the awful time that those veterans had in so many different places. How were you received when you came back?
I'd say the response was pretty much indifference. People didn't really have an understanding. Even then, in 1952, they knew the war had ended. After I got back, it ended, actually. But in 53, but they knew the war was going on and they didn't pay a lot of attention to it. They got it from the radio, all due respect, Don, and they got it from the newspaper and maybe Movie Town News if they went to the theater. That's all they got. And it's entirely different today.
It was so far away. I'm sure that many people didn't even know where Korea was.
I think so, too. Right. You're right.
You know, a lot of people came, we talked about this off the air, a lot of people came to know about the Korean War through the movie first and then the television show MASH. You indicated to me that you never watched MASH. Why?
I watched a couple of episodes and I felt that MASH was a little frivolous in terms of what a field hospital was really like. Now, I didn't ever go to a field hospital in the Army. I went to the Marine Corps Field Hospital, which we called EG Med. And when I was there just a couple of days, it was a very serious, difficult, horrible place because we were doing amputations. I helped the doctor remove veins from dead Marines so they can put them in a jar of some sort of solution and use them to save another leg or another arm or something later on. I worked with a psychiatrist trying to help young kids deal with what they experienced on the hillside of Korea and the fact that what they experienced put them in a position where they couldn't function any longer. It was a pretty serious series of events, and it went on and on and on. And the copters were coming in with the wounded, and the copters were taking the wounded out to get to the hospital ship if they couldn't help them at the field hospital. It was a frantic kind of an experience, and MASH didn't look that way to me. Mm-hmm. Even though I love Alan Alden, I think he's a terrific actor. I couldn't watch it because it bothered me.
They didn't have a laugh track in Korea in the early 50s, did they?
Hardly.
Have you talked to any other veterans about that? And do you think most perhaps felt as you did about watching MASH?
No, I didn't. But you got to remember, Don, that I closed off conversation after I got back. So I didn't go to meetings and it's only recently I went to the Korean War Veterans Association because they wanted me to come there and talk to them. But I didn't even know there was a Korean War Veterans Association. I stayed away from all that. I had a career I wanted to propel with, and I had a family that I wanted to take care of.
I'm sure that you have, like so many of us, paid attention to what's been going on in places like Iraq and Afghanistan and other trouble spots. Apparently, the kind of work that you did in Korea certainly has been much improved. I think that now they're saving lives that could never have been saved during your era.
Oh, yeah. Medicine has changed dramatically, yeah. And the equipment that they have is much better. But I think we did a splendid job of saving the Marines who were injured, and I'm very proud of what we've done, and I'm proud of the fact that they're still there, are still with us. Some of them are still with us. Of course, we're all getting old now.
Yeah, that none of us can stop that process, that's for sure. Well, when are they going to make the movie?
Well, if you'll be the producer, I'm for it.
I'll have to borrow some cash for this job. Well, Leonard Adrian, I want to thank you so much for being with us. Congratulations on the book, and I'm sure you've been thanked many times by people for the service that you provided for the country and for the men that you helped keep alive. Thank you so much for being with us. The book is Hilltop Doc, A Marine Corpsman Fighting Through the Mud and Blood of the Korean War. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.